Mike Bisaglia here from SevillePodcast.com. You are about to listen to Runcast, a weekly form of everything running, with your host, Mark Lorenzoni, a community running expert who has been directing hundreds of area for nonprofit foot races and coaching thousands of runners for the past 30 years.
Hi, everyone. Mark Lorenzoni. Welcome to this week's edition of Runcast. Just a quick state of affairs. A lot of good things going on. Of course, the weather continues to cooperate and starting to break bit by bit. So first sign of spring, although I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite this early like this. Cynthia pulled a tick off of her foot the other morning. So I don't think we've ever seen a tick in February. She went out for her training for Boston with her gang and came back from her long run and found a little tick on her foot. So that's an interesting sign that maybe it wasn't quite cold enough this winter to get those pesky things out of our out of the ground, so to speak. Reminded once again about the wonderful support we get in this community from folks that have been with us a long time in supporting the sport of running. And I got a nice conversation with Ronnie Roberts from the City Police yesterday regarding the 10-miler course, the change in the course for the finish this year. The university has an athletic event on the day of the race, and we've talked about this a little bit. So the finish line is going to have to be changed this year. And we're working with the city on this. And Ronnie Roberts and Tito Durrett, they're just such good guys and trying to work out a compromise and be supportive of the event. And I was reminded of talking to Ronnie about the 1996 Olympics that he and I shared the police car together, the lead vehicle ahead of the torch. Wow. As it came through the city of Charlottesville. And I've been here 32 years. Ronnie's been here long, and we were coming. We've never seen so many people out along the route. We picked up the torch right down at Freebridge, and we ran it up the bypass, turned left onto McIntyre, up Preston, down Grady, up down Rugby to the university, where they lit a fire basin there at the rotunda, and then turned back around and went back down Rugby, and then we picked up went down straight downtown, and they let it go up in the mall, and then we picked the torch up on the other end of the mall and went back out to Freebridge, went down High Street Freebridge. Mike, there were people the entire route packed everywhere. Even on the bypass, they were hanging, their feet dangling from the overpass bridges. There was never a space of 10 feet where there wasn't a cluster of people.
Right.
The entire route. Unlike anything I've ever seen in Charlottesville. Parade, doesn't matter. 10-miler, does not matter. That was amazing.
And
they were heading to Atlanta, obviously, with the torch.
Yeah, well, sort of a once-in-a-lifetime, maybe twice-in-a-lifetime thing that you get to see.
Yeah,
I'd love to have done
he's
that.
He's a big, great, one of our great
Very
police
cool.
officers, and he was in charge of traffic at the time, and he invited me to sit in the car. I had helped with organizing the torch run that year with the United Way coming through. So anyway, and here he is again, still being supportive of the sport of running. So a call out to our city police and particularly Ronnie Roberts and Tito. Cynthia got to, on Sunday, great honor, got to hand the game ball at the Pink Zone game.
Oh, cool.
To the referee. It was a Nike basketball with a Nike pink swoosh and a pink breast cancer ribbon logo kind of emblazed onto the basketball. And I teased Cynthia later, and she got to go up on she and Audrey, because our daughter helps co-direct the event. And it was all about the women's 4-miler tie into the Charlottesville Track Club, $335,000 check they had just recently given. We talked about this to the Breast Cancer Center, so Debbie Ryan had invited them to do this. Very neat. And I teased Cynthia that she must have, touching that ball must have brought bad ice onto the karma of that women's team, because we got to sit through one of the most amazing cold streaks I've ever seen ever U-Haul or JPJ. I felt so bad for Debbie and the women.
Yeah.
They had 5,000 people almost. I don't know if you were there, Mike, but it was a really hard thing to watch because the cool thing about fans, they're all there. You could feel the fiber of connection. They wanted them to, it was 20-0 at one point. They hadn't scored in like 9 minutes and 25 seconds and finally scored. And the place erupted like they just won the game. There was no booing. There were people yelling, come on, but there was none of this, you guys stink. Or,
right.
You can just always feel for a team when they're trying their hearts out and they're just ice cold. Nothing was going in that cylinder.
Yeah, it's part of sports. Sometimes, doesn't matter how good you are, there's just moments where this does not click. But
yeah.
I don't think Cynthia has to worry that it was anything she did.
She goes, oh my gosh, I haven't been to a women's game in a while. She goes, it brought such bad luck to him.
Oh.
Anyway, okay, so what happened? What's in the books from over the weekend? We had a lot of good tales from the last week from the high school regionals. The AA gang was down at FUMA at the Estes Center, and I'll quickly, you can get all of these details at milestat.com, but to highlight some of the kids, first off, the Western girls won, which is a big deal to win regionals, and we had three of the top four teams at the regional championships were local. Third was Flavanna, fourth was Louisa, and then on the boys' side, we took four of the five top spots, and anyone knows anything about what regionals means, that's a lot of high schools from a lot of districts clustering together. The Louisa boys won, Jerry Cutright's gang, Western second, Charlottesville third, very good showing by Charlottesville, and Monticello fifth. Great performances out there on the boys' side. This phenom, Tony Green, he's just racked up a ton of points for Louisa. He won the 55 hurdles, second in the 55 dash, helped the 4x200 win, was second in triple jump, long jump, high jump. Wow.
Doing it all.
Racked a lot of points, and he's probably one of the best athletes, all-around athletes in the area for Central Virginia for this year. Continuing on the boys' side, Derek Armstrong at Western, first in the 1,000, second in the 1,600. His teammate, Henry Giles, third in the 1,600, third in the 1,000. Good job to those guys. Nate Hermsmeyer over at Monticello, first in the 2 mile, 9:45, nice indoor time, fifth in the mile. And then on the girls' side, Kelsey Grupp, first in the pole vault from Western. The 4x8 from Western, Mike, they topped the meet record. The old record was held by Charlottesville High School back in 2004 of 10:07. They shattered it, ran 9:46. So blasted out of there, 21-second bulge there. Olivia Hajak, Katie Farina, Killian O'Connell, and Maddie Webb were your foursome there. And then Maddie Webb kept it going, first in the mile, first in the 1,000. Teammate Claire Johnson, third in the mile, second in the 1,000. And just outside the limelight there, Kathy Merritt from Monticello finished. You have to be in the top six to get to the stage. She was seventh in 1,600. And your heart always goes out to these kids. She seemed pretty happy afterwards. She ran a good time. And, pat on the back to her. And then kind of a comeback award, Emily Moffitt, who spent pretty much the whole fall out with a stress fracture, is really coming back looking good. She's at runs at Western. She ran fourth in the 2 mile. Fantastic. A job. And then on the boys' side, one thing, I got to remember what school this is. Osborne, Dixon, Price, and Scott. Louisa. They broke the record in the 4x4. And little note there that the team that held that record was back in 2002, and it was the boys from Charlottesville High School, Michael Nagash, Andrew Massaro, Farmer, and Ross Pickering. And Ross Pickering, of course, was a young man who died the previous year in a car wreck. And we always are, our hearts go out to the Pickering family, fond memories of a fantastic athlete and a really great young man. And it just brought back a flood of memories of Ross when I saw here 9 years later, that record had been broken. Those guys were all four of those boys were four of the best soccer players in the area. And they were on the stars on the soccer team, but they'd run into a track to keep in shape, and
right.
They were speedy. 3:41 was the old record, and it's now 3:40 by Louisa. Okay, and then on the Ragged Mountain Racing, I'm not finished with the high school. The AAA guys and girls did quite well. Almar boys were second in the 4x8. Ryan Thomas, the freshman phenom, fourth in the mile, 4:29. Mark Bacham, third in the 500. Adam Visicay took a 2 mile blue ribbon, 9:38. Boys were eighth overall, girls were ninth. Elizabeth Sinclair, fifth in the 2 mile onto the state meet, 11:31. Great time for her. So those are the Almar kids. And then the Prep League Championships, Avery Martin from FUMA was first in the mile. FUMA was second as a team, and Woodbury Forest third, two of our local private schools. So very busy time a year for indoor track, and it's interesting. It'll quickly transition into outdoor track. Ragged Mountain Racing, Joel Hess, won 11:47. He won by 7 minutes at a half marathon down at Virginia Beach this weekend. ran negative splits beautiful. Sally Ford, 1743. She was fourth at a 5,000-meter race down at Virginia Tech, so great for her. Some kids that ran here locally and have done quite well since, and they're in college, out at Worcester College, Erin Paluzogan, just a whiz of a kid. She ran at Western. Fantastic, doing all kinds of volunteer work, and going to spend some time in Africa working with some folks there. She was on the DMR distance medley relay. She ran the 1200, and they shattered the school record. And she's just doing fantastic there in her second year. And Jeremy Haney, who ran at FUMA, he just ran a 408 mile for the Naval Academy. So
very cool.
Kids doing good with their feet in college. Rebecca Garson works out at Veritas Vineyards, seemingly quiet woman, you know, unassuming. She's the sixth fastest race walker in the United States in the Masters division for 2010. She's the speediest race walker in Central Virginia. She can haul, and she ran six events, Mike, from 5K all the way up to 40K over the 2010 season in the Grand Prix, and she was the highest point totalist in the group. So congrats to Rebecca Garson, a big deal. Say hi to her when you're out at Veritas sometime doing a wine tasting ask her about her heel-toe travels, I guess.
You know, right.
Heel-toe, that way they never can be off the ground.
Yeah, that's...
The rules are race walking.
So that's basically the rule, just don't lift.
So you can imagine going 40K and running walking 10-minute pace.
I'm trying to visualize it right now as you're talking about it.
Blowing by you. Here you are running and this walker blows by
that's
you.
Funny.
She's very fit and really a nice gal, very modest. And I always have to kind of pull it out of her how her accomplishments are going. Locally, Tracy Houchin, she works over at Gold's Gym. She just ran a 14K odd distance at Virginia Beach, but distance may be odd, but the time was really fantastic, 7:47 a mile. She averaged really great. Call out to her, wonderful job. And then Ann Sweeney and Sally Carlson, I usually just try to call out a couple of seemingly innocent, non-fast runners. These two women are in the 10-mile training program. Big call out to them for completing their first 10-mile run in preparation for 10-mile race of their life. And Ann Sweeney, Sally Carlson, a way to go. Just a quick in the live and learn department, from Mark's mistakes, my own mistakes, not hydrating enough, under hydration, being dehydrated, had a huge impact on how you feel, not only as an athlete, but how you feel as an individual throughout the day. You're supposed to be drinking 60 ounces a day. I'm bad about this. About 85% of the American population at any given time is dehydrated. What are the issues? Or just in general, you feel fatigue, 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon. Gee, I'm tired. Don't know what I've done. Why am I so tired? Yawning a little bit, slowing down a little bit at work,
right.
Misfiring with things coming out of your mouth and forgetting things. And maybe just you bang into the side of the desk as you're getting up. What the heck is wrong with me? And you realize, oh my gosh, I haven't had anything to drink since I came to work this morning. Headache, bowel movements, kind of one of those awkward things to talk about, but they're a big sign. Color of your urine is a really big indicator that obviously the darker it is, the more dehydrated you are. You want to be as clear as possible. But I find with me, I'm grumpy. I get irritable. And when I'm dehydrated, I'd like to just blame it on that. There's probably other reasons too, but got to get more water in me. And then how it can affect you as an athlete, obviously fatigue leads injury, but calf pulls, muscle strains, very much have to do with a lack of water in your system. So the best bet is to carry a water bottle around with you. Forget about the water fountain and, you know, Pepsis and Mountain Dews, things like that. That just doesn't cut it. And, you know, I fear a lot of these drinks that people are having, you know, 6-hour shots, they shoot that down, think that's going to take care of the world for them. But I would say stick to basics, the natural stuff. And water is, boy, hard to beat.
Well, two things. One, now I've never been so thirsty in my life. Just hearing you talk about water, all I can think about that, and is I have my Diet Pepsi hiding in the corner of the room right now. I see it over there. I'm like, I hope he doesn't look at the soda.
I
just had to bring it up, hiding in the corner.
It really is one of these underrated things that is simple to grasp,
right?
But the harder to practice. And I'm one of the guiltiest. And it's just one of those call outs there. Getting it right department this week, Charlie Hurt, good call out to him. He's on our RMR, the post collegiate team, one of the fastest marathoners in Charlottesville, training to get to the Olympic trials, former great Western and William and Mary runner. And his calf was just slightly tight the other day. And instead of doing this workout they had to do, I think it was like 24 200s or something, he said, you know, I'm definitely bagging the workout today. Let the calf, it was just tweak just a little bit. And obviously, if you got a calf tweak, the worst place in the world to be going, especially in the wintertime, is the track. For what, 200s? Because those are, you know, half of a lap, yeah. Running fast, not good. So smart guy, and 2 days later, the injury is completely gone. So if he had run that workout, and this is not melodrama,
yeah,
he probably would have sat out for 2 or 3 weeks with a serious injury, if not longer, and been babying it for the next month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a day off, nurses it a little bit more, 2 days later, he's back running again. Same thing, call out to Mike Gaffney, had a foot issue. He's training for the Boston Marathon. He's a great marathoner, and just a little tweak in his foot. We pieced together what the deal was, a little bit too many hard days in a row, not recovering enough. He ices it, backs off, takes a couple easy days, and away he goes. Vicky Chandeville, call out to her, getting it right. She had a great workout the other day. She's an assistant coach out at Western, teaches at Covenant, sub-3 marathoner, and she had this 3-mile tempo run to do on the track in the middle of a workout. And I said to her, Vicky, what's the most important part of this workout? She says, Coach, first lap. Yeah, sets the tone, lays the foundation. So I said, you're shooting for X pace. You want to run 6:10 per mile. Okay. What should your first lap be? Not 6:10 pace, slower. So what does she do? She goes out slow. First 100, 200, 400, which is the first lap. She's already slow, you know, off the pace she needed to be for a 6:10 pace.
Yep.
Beautiful. Call out to her. I said, girl, you're ready to go. She had, you know, 11 laps to go at that point. Worked it down. Nailed her pace. Beautiful workout. Heidi Johnson, a call out to her. She's my captain for the Boston team on getting it right. She just gets it right with balancing her week. She's great with the hydration, stretching. She does sports-specific stuff for her cross-training on her off days from running, yoga, Pilates, core. Lot of smart stuff. Gets her sleep, backs off of her runs when she's feeling. I mean, she's the ultimate captain to have for a team in that she practices what her coach preaches.
Sure.
And people observe that. And she's always the one saying, wagging her finger, saying, you know, better take some time off, better watch this, listen to your body. And we do, that's a cliche, listen to your body, but a lot of times people are ignoring, gee, I'm tired today, but I got to get this workout done. Got to do this run at a certain time. No. Oh, no.
Yeah, and I listened to my body. I was debating if I should go run this morning, but I didn't get home till 11 last night because of work and whatnot. I said, Mike, you got to get some sleep or you're just going to be in trouble the rest of the day. And I listened.
I mean, running is this fantastic sport. I can tout it all day long. I've talked about it a couple times on Runcast here about how it does all these remarkable things for you in a relatively short period of time. An hour running can be really fantastic for you long term. But at the same time, it's a magnifier. So if you're feeling bad, you're sick, you haven't been getting your sleep, you risk getting hurt. If you push through your run, you either want to slow down, cut back the mileage, or take the day off. And when I was sick a few weeks ago, I took 3-4 days in a row off of running altogether. There's no way I'm going out there and running when I'm sick. Sets me back, but also I risk getting hurt.
Yeah.
Yes, last week we talked about caffeine a little
That's
bit
right.
off the air. And I'm not a coffee drinker, believe it or not. It's kind of a, you know, I sometimes people find that hard to believe, and other times people say, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because Mark Aronzoni on caffeine would be a pretty frightening little phenom of, you know, bizarre behavior around town. So I just never got into it. I never had issues in college with sleep, and I don't know what right. it was. But it's a fantastic partner for a lot of people in their lives. I never preach negatively about it, first off, because I don't – do it myself, so I'm not. I don't want to ever look like I'm condemning. But the flip side is, I do see the goodness of it in a lot of people's lives. And if you're a runner and you're used to drinking coffee, by God, you know, get your
Make
coffee
sure you
in before
it.
You go out. Yes, it's very, very important. You don't want to change that behavior. There's no research showing that it's got some kind of negative side to it. Now, if you're not a coffee drinker and you say, "Oh my gosh, so and so does that," and of course this holds true with everything, you don't drink coffee before the start of a big race just because you observe people saying, yeah, I always have a cup or two of coffee before my run or before my race.
Right.
So very, very important, obviously, to stick with that kind of golden rule of never trying something new on race day. Experiment. But you are a coffee drinker. By golly, you know, keep chugging away.
I made the mistake, because I am a coffee drinker, of not drinking it one morning before a race, thinking, well, it's a race, I shouldn't have coffee. And that was a bad idea. It wasn't good.
Yeah. You change out of your routine there.
Yeah.
Your routine is your own personal routine. Works. That's why I tell a lot of my new athletes to journal. You keep a journal as they're trying new things, and they try something and it goes bad. I say, write that in there. Went bad.
Yeah.
Don't go back to it again. Something goes really well. Certain amount of sleep the night before, a certain meal you ate the night before, a big run, certain behavior during that run. You write it down and you journal it and you bottle it. Excuse me. Heads up department. There's just a lot of new gravel and grading going on in the dirt roads around the area, out of Green Springs and Louisa, Keene, Ridge Road, out in the county. All these wonderful places we get to run, soft surface places. A lot of big, chunky gravel up and about. It's tough on your Achilles, calves. You can turn an ankle. We got to do it. If we don't gravel these country roads, they end up being dirt roads, and dirt roads ultimately would end up with potholes that would, swallow up a small car. If you can imagine, people can complain about roads with potholes on it because they haven't been graded and haven't been ungraveled. So we got to have it. But this time of year, just be heads up. We had some complaints from some folks that ran down in Keene this weekend about turning ankles. Giving back department, Virginia National Bank, one of my favorite groups of folks in our community that truly are community partners. They have given so much to the sport of running at so many different levels, quietly and maybe sometimes not so quietly, things like the 10-miler, the major sponsor. But a lot of times they're giving behind the scenes, and they've got a lot of runners and walkers on their staff, people that high up and people that are workers for them. It starts with Mark Giles and Glenn Russ and Dan Gooding, Paula. There's a lot of great enthusiasm and energy within that company, and a great local company. And then the McIntosh family, not as grand as Virginia National Bank, Tom and Carol, they live out in Free Union, and they loan their field every time we have any kind of event out in Free Union on that beautiful flat course on Wesley Chapel Road. The McIntosh has opened their field up to us for training runs, for fundraising races. A real tip of the cap to the McIntoshes, who are both runners themselves. Volunteer of the Week, one of my favorite guys in the Schultzville Track Club over the years. I've known him for almost 30 years, John Lloyd. He's works over at the Curry School. And John just keeps chugging along with his running. But he directed the Chicken Run for over a decade and helps at pretty much every finish line of just about any not-for-profit local foot race. John's there. He was helping at the Valentine's Run a few weeks ago. He runs the Timing Machine, which is when you ran the race, Mike, someone was having to record you as you came across, and they're punching. They got this, cord with a little button at the end, and they're punching that. Well, that's a timing machine. Then they plug that into the computer, download it, and they give you place, your name, your age, your gender, your time, your pace.
The whole
beautiful.
Deal.
And John's just kind of a calm, really laid back, but just reliable volunteer I can't even imagine how many races he's been involved with over the years. Coach of the Week goes, it's a husband and wife, Tandem Winston and Beth Brown. Winston, the term legendary probably fits pretty good. He's a track buff, track enthusiast. He's down at FUMA running the show there, and God knows how many track championships they've won over the last 25 years, and he's been a part of many of those outdoor track championships and cross-country championships. Great influence on young men. His wife, Beth, was a runner at Louisa. Now she's a middle school teacher. She does a lot of inside-the-house recruiting of these middle school kids to get them thinking about running in high school, and she assists Jerry Cutright out there. And they currently have two young men living with them. One's in middle school. I think one has just gone into high school, the Lamont brothers, and they're lost boys. They're the Sudanese, that whole lost boy movement. These kids were, stolen in the night to go out and be rebels, and a lot of them were taken from their families, and some of them fled, and ultimately these boys have ended up at Winston and Beth's house for the last, a year and a half, kind of foster parents, so to speak. And their big brother is a U.S. citizen now, and he's made the Olympic team in the mile in 2008. But it goes, a lot of times people say, someone's really devoted to a certain passion.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see someone opening their home, I remember Winston telling me a story that the first couple of nights they were there, Beth said, "What's that noise?" It's the middle of the night. Somebody's wandering around the house. What's that noise? They get up. Turns out one of the boys was in the bathtub soaking. And they said, what are you doing in the bathroom? It's like, you know, 12 o'clock at night. Yeah. And in his broken English, he said, you know, he had never really spent any time. He was just fascinated with this whole concept of clean water in a bathtub, hot water, and just, you know, just turn on a tap and something we take for granted. So very neat stuff. But they truly are gifts to our running community, and we're blessed to have them both. Let's see. Okay, so I wanted to talk quickly about the new 10-miler finish. We talked about Ronnie Roberts approving it yesterday, he and Tito in the city. Very neat, Mike. You know, of course, good always comes from bad. We were frustrated, not mad, but just UVA had a conflict. They said you can't use Copley Road, the road that we finish on with all the pear blossom trees on it that's right there between U-Haul and the track and the Klockner and the Davenport Field, that section of road that comes over the Morgan Harrington Bridge there. So we're like, oh, you know, wait, what are we going to do? So we start looking around. And, of course, I directed the race for 12 years and helped design that course. And so it's kind of a little baby of mine. I'm like, you know, what's going to happen here? We're all upset and frustrated. You know, how are we going to get the runners back to their cars and the finish line? And what we're going to end up doing, we just got to tweak a little bit, but they come down McCormick at the end of the race, right around to the 9-mile mark, and they'll make a sweeping. They'll run down McCormick on the left-hand side of the road, so the lawn range side of the road, down McCormick on the amphitheater side, all the way down, cross the bridge where Emmett goes underneath, 29 Business, if you're following along. They'll get to the 9-mile mark, which is right there in front of the old dorms, and they'll go around that little island there, and now they're coming back up McCormick, but they'll make a quick left-hand turn onto that ramp that takes you down onto Emmett.
Okay.
You follow me. And you go by the Dell and Mem Gym. You'll go by Alumni Hall. And now you're hauling downhill. You're on Emmett Street. They're going to close Emmett Street, that side of Emmett Street. Amazing.
Yes.
You'll go through that light at the Cavalier Inn. That's a downhill there. Yeah. I mean, you're going to be smoking. Now you can see the finish line. You'll go underneath the railroad tracks. You'll go past you'll go underneath the footbridge there, that neat little footbridge that goes, and you'll finish right there on Emmett. And then they'll turn you up the hill. You'll be finished. You'll be walking up the hill up to drinks, massages, food, and the award ceremony up at University Hall. Very neat. So,
great.
A totally downhill, pretty much flat to totally downhill finish. We should see some faster times this year because the last mile of the 10-miler course for the 30-some-odd years that we've had that course has notoriously been a difficult mile because you've got to struggle over the rolling hills of Alderman Road, and you know it all too well, past the Catholic Church, down past the Methodist Church, St. Mark's, and then up over the Harrington Bridge again and to the finish line.
Yeah, so, no, actually.
Much faster finish.
When I went on my weekend run, I did that, and you can feel it. Those hills are more than you
think. None of that stuff now. And you'll be going downhill as it is going down McCormick. You're cruising down McCormick past the range and Alderman Library. You cruise on down to that. You're not going to have a hill for almost a mile and a half. Now, that's totally changing some perspective there. So congrats to Mike Inge, the new race director, on getting that secured, and really pretty psyched about it. We just announced the launching of the Distance Cup, a partnership with Dwayne over at the Parks and Rec Department over at Waynesboro. He's a very innovative, creative guy, always thinking up new ideas. He's got a wine tour series of races over there. He was kind of photographed, he was photographed recently in the Crozet Tunnel, the one that goes underneath Afton Mountain. They're talking about opening that up to have it be a place for people to walk or run, a partnership with Nelson County. But anyway, he's got a half marathon called a park-to-park half marathon the end of April. And he says, Mark, why don't we do a 49er club, kind of a poor man's ultra-marathon club. You run the Charlottesville 10-miler, you run the park-to-park, so that's 10 miles, 13 miles, and then you run the Three Bridges Marathon in December, all not-for-profit, locally, Central Virginia, locally, run races.
Right.
That's 49 miles, kind of ultra-marathon, but you're running them separately.
Yeah.
And you get a fleece jacket, or you get some kind of special prize if you do all three. It'll be a select few that do it, but kind of a neat thing. He's cooked it up, so I think we're going to go ahead and do that. The Boston Marathon, the new rules came out for getting into the race for the next 2 years. They've changed the qualifying times by 5 minutes. A lot of people upset about it. Don't blame them. But at the same time, bars are meant to be, you rise up to a bar and you overcome barriers. We've always been this way. especially runners with a time barrier. You say, okay, you know, this thing, I don't think I can hit that time. Will you train a little harder? You get your coach, someone like me, to sit down and say, how can we do this? But they've got an interesting little bridge between this year and next year to get in. And the reason they're doing this is, you may have heard this past year, the race closed in 8 hours.
Hmm.
A lot of thousands of people were closed out. And because the race closed in October, everyone that ran the New York City Marathon, Marine Corps Marathon, Richmond Marathon, Philadelphia Marathon, we're looking over, that's probably 120,000 people that ran in those races. And of course, in there were a bunch of people that qualified. They're closed out. The race was ready to close. So they're now they're punched out, pushed out to 2012. So they were feeling like this year was going to close in like 1 or 2 hours for the 2012 edition. I know this sounds confusing, but they said it's gotten ridiculous. We're closing people out. It's never happened like this before. Always in the old days, if you qualified, you were going to run the Boston Marathon. All you had to do was enter. Now you got to run it by a certain time. You still have to run a certain time, but you got to run it by a certain date.
Right.
Otherwise, you're pushed out to find you. So the BAA, the Boston Athletic Association, said, we got to come up with some changes. And
wow.
You go to their website, and it's all explained in there. And I always chide my runners by telling them, listen, you train harder, you get more experience, you stay injury-free, you stick with something, you can nail this thing. Not everybody is meant to qualify for the Boston Marathon, but if someone's reasonably close, this new change of making it faster, there's something called aging up. So if you're 39 or 38 or even 37, you turn 40, the time is slower than the 35 to 39, and
okay.
There's always a shot there. So a little confusing. Anybody had any questions can give me a shout on it because I've got some pretty strong opinions about it. Let's see. The Runopedia terms, overstriding, is a term that's used quite often. We were all taught, us guys, of course you're a lot younger than me, but we grew up in the 60s and 70s, 80s. We were taught to open up the stride, heel toe, lengthen things out, air it out, all wrong. Hitting your heels first is really bad for your knees long term. Something I experienced a few years ago when I turned 51. All of a sudden, both knees started hurting. First time in my life. Been running for 30-something years at that point. It was like 35 years. I said, what is going on? Turns out I'm overstriding. Went to Dr. Wilder. One thing led to another. Jay DeSherry. They said, you're overstriding. Do a little count. When you go next time you go out and run, you're supposed to follow the 30-20 rule, which is 30 hits, 1 foot, every 20 seconds. It's basically 90 per minute. I was 23 hits for 20. Bad Ooh. Boy. So I was hitting my heel first because I was over. When you overstride, there's pretty much only one place. There's two places you can hit. Two choices. Heel or the ball of foot. Neither one is great for absorbing shock. So my knee aches had a lot to do with me overstriding. So I shortened my stride. I'm now 29 hits for 20 seconds, up from 23 hits. So very, for me, big jump. Knee pain disappeared after about 6 months of working on it, slowly dissipated, gone, and I'm 55 now. I've been doing it ever since. Midfoot mechanics is what it's called. The Kenyans do it, the Ethiopians. The longer the distance you run, the more it benefits you to practice short stride midfoot mechanics. The greater your stride is, the more inefficient you are, the greater chance of injury, but also running slower, because people always comment, well, I'm going to run slower if I shorten my stride. Not necessarily. Turn it over, hit in the middle of the foot, absorbing shock when you hit the ground. You don't want to hit the ground and not be absorbing shock. Hit the ground and your heel takes all of that impact. That's bad. You want your foot to be absorbing shock, not driving shock up into your legs. Our local running history of trivia, the answer, I don't think we had anyone answer this week. Alec didn't tell me. I said, two former champions have boys that are running for Jason Vigilante at UVA.
Right.
One is Drew Mearns. He has Colin and Andrew, but two sons at UVA currently running. And the other one's Mike Cotton. They're both, Drew was a champion in the late 70s. Mike was a champion in the early 80s as a 10 miler. Mike ultimately went on to be one of only three people to break 50 minutes on the 10 miler course. Pretty impressive. 49, I think he ran like 49:30, if you can imagine. Under 5 minute pace on that hellacious course. His son David is now running at UVA. So Colin and Andrew Mearns, David Cotton, the answer to our trivia question last weekend. I didn't have anybody, call in. The goal is to make it hard, but not so hard that people can't answer it. Here's this week's question. I'm going to continue on with kind of going back a few years. This former mayor, who is still an avid walker, was one of the founding fathers of the RTF, which is the Ravana Trails Foundation. It's the urban green belt that loops our city. Beautiful. Former mayor. He's currently an avid walker. He was one of the founding fathers. He's still very involved with the RTF. I'll give you a hint. He is married to Charlottesville's first female mayor. So you got two mayors in the house. Talk about a political powerhouse.
Yeah.
First correct answer wins a T-shirt. All right. In the starting blocks this week, this Saturday morning, we've got a kids track clinic and track meet free, open to the public. This Saturday over at the UVA track at 8:30 a.m., ages 4 to 12. Have some fun with them, do a little clinic, and then cut them loose with some age group races there, break them into the appropriate age groups. So that's this Saturday. That's the 26th of February. Enter the 10-miler and the Martha Jefferson 8K now because the price goes up on March 1st. 10-miler goes up $10 on March 1st. So go to charlottesvilletrackclub.org and get your entry in. They have about 1,500 entries already. The great tune-up for that is the MJ 8K, the Martha Jefferson 8K. It's half the distance, runs over a lot of the same turf. It's 2 weeks out, 5 miles. Nice little tune-up. And that's, again, on the 12th. So you got the March 12th is the MJK. March 26th is the 10-miler. High school state meets this weekend, indoor championships, culmination of the season. Our AA and AAA and single A kids will be all over the place competing. And then Jason Vigilante's gang at UVA, boys and girls, men and women, are down at the ACC championships, which are at Tech, Virginia Tech. They're a beautiful facility. We continue to host Wednesday morning speed workouts for anybody interested in getting faster, 5K up to the marathon distance. We have Friday groups. We had almost 60 people out there this morning, 5:30 in the morning, U-Haul parking lot. People say, why is it so early? And I say, well, if you got a life, you probably want to get your exercise done before your life starts, you know, school, work, whatever. And we got a variety of ages out there. Runners of the week, Tony Green, the Louisa point getter, racked up a lot of points for their championship, regional championship team. Adam Visicay winning the 2 mile for Albemarle. Joel Hess, that great 111 half marathon. And then Maddie Webb doubling up. Pretty impressive stuff there. And then hats off to Ann Sweeney and Sally Carlson again. Pretty impressive. I think they were just as happy when I saw them about completing this long distance adventure, even though it's a quote unquote training run, as anybody was of these other folks in winning their races. All right, so that's about it for the week. Get out there and enjoy the weather. Just watch how much weather's a great motivator and gets you fired up. But you got to be careful to follow that 10 to 15% rule. Never increase your mileage by more than 10 to 15% on any given week. And just keep staying on your feet. Talk to you next week.
This week's edition of RunCast was brought to you by the Ragged Mountain Running Shop, Central Virginia's community running and walking family partner since 1982. Conveniently located on the historic UVA corner with free parking at their doorstop. Visit them online at raggedmountainrunning.com or make sure you friend them on Facebook, Ragged Mountain Running Shop.